Hello and welcome in.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio.
Good morning. You're listening to Science Mixtape with me, Matilda Hay. Dreams are eternally fascinating. How are they created? And why do we dream? These are just some of the questions that our guest, Dr. Josie Malinowski from the University of East London, will be answering today. Josie's research includes studying whether dreams help us to process our emotional experiences, how doing dream work can help us find insights into our own lives, and how suppressing our waking thoughts affects our dreams. Welcome, Josie. How are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm very well. How are you?
I'm great. Now, you describe yourself as a dream fanatic. So yeah. I want to know, what got you interested in the science of dreams?
So I'd say I've been a dream fanatic for probably my whole life. When I was about 10 or 11, I first started writing my dreams down. Like many people that get into dreams from an early age, I found them really fascinating because they were so weird. And I was consulting dream dictionaries when I was a teenager and things like that. But it wasn't until I was in my early 20s that I started getting really into dreams. And the reason for that was because at the time I was doing my undergraduate degree in English literature, and my final year project was a creative writing project which I centered on surrealism. So I was doing a lot of research into surrealism and a lot of surrealist writing, and I found out that for surrealists, dreams aren't just a curiosity as they had been for me until that point, but they were actually a way to access pure unconscious thought. And from that, I ended up finding and joining a surrealist group in London, the Surrealist London Action Group. And that kind of changed the course of my life in a way, because I was a member of that group for 10 years. And I was also a member of the Leeds Surrealist Group and met surrealists all across the world. And we spent a lot of time talking about our dreams. Dreams were a really important source of inspiration. So we would use them to play games. We would use them to write poetry. And I used my own dreams in my creative writing independently as well. So I was coming from that place to begin with. And then when I was in my mid-20s, I was working various jobs in Bristol, not really knowing what to do with my life. And I had this sudden flash of inspiration. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to figure out what dreams are. So I packed up my stuff and I moved to Brighton and started my education again, and I did a conversion course to psychology. And while I was doing that, I was looking for dream research PhDs, and they're incredibly rare, as you would imagine. I couldn't find any for months on end, but I just got really lucky, and towards the end of my degree, I found a dream research PhD. So I went for it. I moved up to Leeds and started doing sort of more scientific, psychological dream research. And I have been ever since.
Wow. So you've really, both sides, you've gone from the kind of arty, being inspired by your dreams, to actually looking at them and understanding them. Yeah. That is so cool. Also in the studio today, we have Kyle, who I believe has a brain teaser.
Morning. So today's brain teaser is actually more of a trivia question this week. A psychologist studies the science of the mind, a biologist studies the science of living things, but what do you call someone who studies the science of dreaming? So get in touch on Twitter at Science Mixtape if you know the answer to that, and we'll have a little read of the answers at the end of the show and see if anyone gets even close to the right answer.
And for our experiment today, Josie's going to be guiding us into a bit of a dream state. So if you want to take part at home, all you need is your ears and somewhere quiet to lie down. You can also sit, but I think lying's better. And Josie, it's your mixtape. What is your first song and why?
Okay, so my first song I'm so excited about. So this is by the musician that's had the most influence over my life, I'd say. His music has been a soundtrack to the best experiences I've ever had and helped get me through the worst experiences. And when he died a couple of years ago, it really had a profound impact on me. And what's happened since is that he's become a lucid dream guide for me. So
when Since he died?
Yeah, since he died. So when I go into lucid dreams, he will often be there and he'll take me on dream adventures and guide me through the dream. And I actually get to hang out with him in my own dream world.
Wow.
So I didn't know which song to choose. There were so many I could have chosen from. I easily could have picked all of my 6 songs by this artist. So I just chose one that I know I would be super excited to hear on the radio, and also one that happens to mention dreaming.
And what is it?
So this is Joe the Lion by David Bowie.
Most people dream 4 to 6 times a night.
Why do we dream, Josie? Do we know why we dream?
The short answer is we don't know, but we're trying to figure out. The long answer is too long for the show, so I'll just mention one of the potential reasons that some of my research has focused on. So my PhD and some of my subsequent research that I've done using lots of different methodologies has often pointed in the same direction, which is that dreams seem to help us process and sort through and remember our emotional experiences particularly. So things like we dream more of our emotional experiences than our unemotional experiences, and dreams, especially in REM sleep and towards the end of the night, tend to be kind of a hotbed for really intense emotions, fear, anxiety, joy, that kind of thing. Some of the more qualitative work that I've done has been looking at how dreams seem to use metaphor and hyper-associativity and different things like that to come up with insights into our emotional experiences and to remember them and to work through them and to assimilate them into our memory system. And that is really in line with one of the dominant theories of REM sleep, which is that REM sleep is like overnight therapy. That's the phrase.
Just for anyone who doesn't know, so REM sleep, that stands for rapid eye movement
sleep. Yeah.
And that's that we have like 4 sleep phases, don't we?
We have, it's split into 2 categories: REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, and non-rapid eye movement sleep. And then non-rapid eye movement sleep is then broken down into 3 more stages.
Oh, okay.
So stage 1, stage 2, and stage 3. And rapid eye movement sleep is the stage of sleep that was only discovered about 70 years ago. So we didn't know about it until then. Before then, it was thought that sleep was kind of like just switching off and resting and relaxing. But when REM sleep was discovered, it was discovered that actually our brains are incredibly active during that particular stage of sleep, easily in line with wakeful activity, and to some extent even more. And one of the theories of why we have that kind of sleep is to help us process our emotions. And there's some really good evidence to suggest that REM sleep is absolutely crucial for emotion regulation and mood regulation and that kind of thing. So it makes complete sense that dreams would be in line with that and reflect that.
And how have you discovered this? How have you gone about realizing that dreams are process our emotions? Like, it kind of makes sense, because we all have an idea that they are influenced by what you're going through in your daily life.
Mm-hmm.
But how have you gone about working that out?
So I've used 2 main methods. One, a kind of quantitative experimental type of method where I ask people to record their dreams. Either I get them to wake themselves up periodically throughout the night, which isn't much fun, but it's a nice systematic way of obtaining dream reports. Or I just get them to write them down every morning for a period of time, 2 weeks or a month. And then I look at how those dreams are relating to their waking life experiences and thoughts. And what we're finding from that is that dreams are more likely to refer back to emotional experiences than ones that aren't very emotional. So it's as if dreams are selectively choosing to replay emotional experiences rather than ones that didn't elicit an emotion.
And would there be some emotions that come up more often, like anger or sadness? Or, I mean, everyone talks about anxiety dreams, and I've definitely had anxiety dreams, but...
Yeah, so there's...
Do you get the love and the happiness as well?
Or? You definitely do. So one of the things that I've been finding is that actually when you research it systematically, there's no difference in how often we dream of unpleasant experiences in comparison to the more nice, pleasant experiences. So although there's a selective incorporation of emotional experiences, we're incorporating positive ones just as often as negative ones. So that seems to suggest that it's not just about down-regulating negative emotional experiences, but processing all of them, because emotions are telling us what's important to remember. Mm. It's telling us, you know, that experience was important to you in some way, and so you need to put that into your memory system.
And so we only dream in REM sleep. So if you stopped someone from being able to go into REM sleep and you stopped them from dreaming, do you notice that they are less emotionally intelligent, or that, you know, they've got some sort of bottled up emotions going on?
Yeah, definitely. So sleep science has done experiments like that, deprive people of REM sleep only and allowed them to have non-REM sleep. What they find is that people tend to overreact emotionally to everything. So if you present them with some sort of fearful stimulus, they will have a really massive overreaction to that stimulus. But it will be the same if you present them with something positive. They'll have like an almost sort of manic overreaction to the positive stimulus as well.
That's so interesting. Ah, time for song number two. Okay. What have you chosen and why?
So song number two is by another of my favourite musicians, but much more contemporary and of a very different genre. This is coming from breakcore, which came out of jungle. And I discovered this musician when I was an undergraduate. My friend Elisa first played me his music and it completely blew my mind. And then we saw him together in Leeds in about 2006. And that was when he was at the absolute height of his genius. And I just became really obsessed with him, and I've probably seen him 20 or 30 times since then. And he blows my mind every single time. Even just listening to his album tracks blow my mind. So I've chosen a clip from one of my favourite albums, which is, I'm not even going to try and pronounce it. It's called the Hungarian album, because no one can pronounce what it's actually called. And the song is called Hajnal.
Among the most common recalled dreams are those about falling, being chased, or being back in school. So that turns out that's actually from a study from like American people who are talking about what the most common dreams that they had, and that's what they had. It was those about falling, being chased, or back in school, and I've definitely had all of those dreams.
I don't think I've ever had the chased one, but I've definitely had the back in school. And falling maybe a little bit, not so much. Yeah. You, Josie?
Yeah, I've definitely had all of those dreams, and I've looked into that research actually, and that's not just the case in America. I think these dreams are really common in every study that they've done in every country that they've done it in.
So it's clearly some universal emotions that are really attached to those images or something.
Yeah. I mean, the being back in school one could be metaphorical for anxiety. Being chased could represent sort of general fears, or running away kind of fears, that kind of thing.
Well, I'm getting distracted because we are going to go into our dream state. So there's a couple of ways that you can do this. I think one you told me, Josie, is sort of when you're asleep and you try and become conscious in your dreams, and that's lucid dreaming.
Right.
But obviously we're not asleep right now, and it would take too long to go to sleep. So we're going to do when you're awake and you gently go into a dream state, and that's called hypnagogic dreaming.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. I believe that you actually normally this takes like 15 minutes to do, mm-hmm. and you do it in talks at festivals and stuff.
Yeah.
So listeners, we're going to get a shortened version now. Me and Kyle have done the whole 15 minutes, and we'll share with you our experiences. And if you want to try the whole 15 minutes for yourself, listen until the end of the podcast. So not this show, but the podcast, and we will attach it to the end of that. Okay, Josie, I'm ready.
Okay.
Take it away.
Lovely. So we're going to take a journey into a hypnagogic dream induction. Hypnagogic dream is the kind of dream that you get when you're in that kind of liminal space between
being awake and being asleep. So in that sort of 10 or 15 minutes of sleep onset, you're generally having lots of hypnagogic dreams, and that's what I'm going to try and induce now. So I'm going to try and get everybody into a relaxed hypnagogic type state. So you need to be somewhere really comfortable as you can be. Sitting or lying down is preferable. And when you're sitting or lying down, get yourself into the most comfortable spot that you can, and then close your eyes. And try to just relax into the induction. Try to let go of any expectations you might have about what might be about to happen. And be aware that everybody that does this has their own unique experience. There's no right or wrong way of doing this. It's just uniquely yours. So when you've got your eyes closed, begin to start to notice your breathing. Notice when you breathe in and notice when you breathe out. Now start to take some deep, gentle breaths. Breathe slowly in for 4 and out for 4. Ready? Breathe in, 2, 3, 4. Out, 2, 3, 4. In, 2, 3, 4. Out, 2, 3, 4. And in, 2, 3, 4. Out, 2, 3, 4. And as you breathe slowly in and out, feel your muscles begin to relax and soften. Feel your body connected to the chair or your bed, and feel the ground supporting you and holding you up. Try to let go of anything that's bothering you in the moment, because you don't have to worry about it right now. Now think of an emotion that's relevant to you in your life right now. Allow that feeling to really course through your body. Feel it right from the top of your head, all the way down your body, into your toes. Embrace and embody that feeling and let it rush through you. Now, with that feeling engulfing your body, and still with your eyes closed, allow a visual image to appear in your mind's eye. It can be any kind of image or pattern, shape, colour, or whatever appears. Don't look for it and don't force it, just allow it to appear. Breathe slowly and softly into the image and let it take a shape of its own. And when you're ready, open your eyes.
That's so beautiful, the way you read it. Wow, even that few minute version, I felt like I was really sinking into something. I'm gonna talk about what I experienced when I tried it myself at home over the full 15 minutes. So the image, I think I took it quite literally when you said a shape or an image. And the image that I saw was a big round circle. It seemed kind of gaseous, fluid, like the sun almost. It was a bit orange, but then as soon as I decided it was a bit like the sun, it became brighter and looked more like the sun, and sort of fiery. It came towards me, then it went further away again, and as it went further away again, I realized there was a silhouette of a man in front of it, but like really cartoony silhouette, like he had a big trench coat and a collar and a hat and dog on a lead.
Wow.
But then it was a cat, and then there were lots of cats trying to climb a wall. And then you said to open your eyes, and that's about as far as I got. It was so weird.
Wow, that's really hypnagogic. And did that make sense in terms of the emotion that you were embodying?
I don't know. I don't think I was aware of an emotion. Mm. I think I wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking of like the image, and then just like lost in this world of cats.
Wow.
I'm not even one of those like YouTube cat people. Like, this isn't, I'm not like a cat fiend.
I know some YouTube cat people, and they would absolutely love that dream. That'd be so good. Yeah, I had something similar. I did have a kind of strong emotional like linkage with what I was doing. So initially you said you start with a shape, and I just thought of a triangle, for you know, just like an actual shape, and then that kind of changed into a star, and then the star like shifted into a flame sort of shape, and then I actually had to like an image appear which I had an association with, and that was I was connected to somebody else who I didn't recognize, but we were in a kind of like cerebral fluid or like wow. spinal fluid, like mutual transfusion. So we were both connected by a cable that was at like the base of our skull. And I remember seeing this like light blue fluid like flowing between the two of us. And that was also like in parallel, like I knew that I was feeling like a transmission of the emotions of the other guy. And he was in this like, yeah, let's go party kind of mood. Like he was in a weird, like a mood, like he wanted to go out and like go have a night out. And then I remembered that I wasn't supposed to be asleep. I was supposed to be like remembering this. And so I woke up and then wrote down all of this. And it sounds kind of crazy when you talk about
it's
it. Like
so sci-fi, like yeah. connected cerebrally to someone else. It's amazing.
That's an incredible hypnagogic dream.
Have you had dreams like that before?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think so. It's definitely in that. I remember you were talking about this hypnagogic stage. It's like almost when if you wake up in the morning and then you fall back asleep again, but you don't really go all the way into sleep. You're in this kind of, and then something happens. I also very often have this one thing, which is where when I'm falling asleep, if I'm in this hypnagogic state and then I hear a loud noise, I see a bright light, and it's always like a bright flash, which is associated
like
with it.
Like synesthesia, like your senses are getting crossed.
Yeah, well, I've never, really and cool. I only ever have that kind of thing when I'm in this state, and I've tried to speak to people about it, and no one has ever, I've always been like, when you're falling asleep, do you see like lights when you hear sound? And everyone's like, no. So it must just be me. I don't know if there's actually any kind of...
Well, Richard Feynman, I remember reading his book, and he did like, when he was at university or something, did this project which involved watching how you fall asleep, and he just sit in a room till he fell asleep, and he got better and better at being like attuned to moving into that sleep stage. So maybe it's just that you're more aware of stuff, Carl, because I think I just lie in bed, I listen to a podcast to like stop my mind from running, and then I'm asleep. So I'm maybe not giving myself that space to be attentive to what's happening. I don't know.
What having experiences like that, but you wouldn't remember them upon awakening.
True. Yeah. So why is it interesting to be able to do this? What insights? Or is it hypnagogic or lucid dreaming? Why is it interesting?
They're two very different states of dreaming. So hypnagogic dreaming is just as you're falling asleep, but you're kind of halfway between wakefulness and sleep. So it's almost like wake dreaming. I wouldn't say daydreaming because it's much more dreamlike, but it's almost like you're dreaming while you're still awake. Whereas lucid dreaming is when you're kind of awake while you're asleep, if you see what I mean. It's almost the opposite. So you're completely asleep, usually in rapid eye movement sleep, and then you're having a dream. And at some point in the dream, you suddenly have a flash of inspiration of, oh my God, this is a dream. And you wake up and you become aware of the dream state. And that is one of the most awesome types of dreaming there is, because first of all, it's just so exciting because, you know, like Carl said, we have 4 to 6 dreams a night, and we tend to just accept the reality of the dream world while we're in the dream. You know, we don't realize that we're dreaming. We just accept that this is how it is. But when you wake up or become lucid in a dream, you suddenly realize that you're in your own virtual reality. And if you have some control over the dream, you can then explore anything that your imagination can come up with.
Wow. On that note, let's go to your next song and we can... Brilliant. I want to ask you more of that afterwards. So what is next?
So my third song is by one of my favourite current bands. And I actually first heard them play again when I was in Leeds living there. And the tour manager of the band was going out with my then housemate, Lucy. So we went to see them and I totally fell in love with them. I thought they were a really talented, phenomenal band. And I listened to their first album, but they kind of fell off my radar for some reason for a few years, and then came back on it the first time I went to Boomtown Festival, which was a couple of years ago. And my friend Drew that I was there with said, oh, you've got to come and see this band. I always see them at the Lion's Den stage every year. They're so awesome. It's the Skints. And I was like, I know the Skints. I remember them. I used to watch them live in Leeds years and years ago. And so after that, I started listening to their albums, their more recent albums, completely obsessively, and tried to find when they were playing live in London. They don't play anywhere near often enough.
And I think they're one of the most talented bands out there at the moment, but they don't have the recognition that they deserve by a long way. So that's why I want to play something by then. And this song is called Up Against the Wall, and it's The Skints.
I grab my jacket and I pack it, then I head out the door. The sun, it is a shining and I want to explore. So I take a little trip to an out-of-town club. Fill up a little spliff and then be rocking to the dub. Boom, boom, go the bass, pop, pop, go the drum. The vocal come around like an instruction. No man can resist that primitive call. The land I never put a back against the wall. Up against the wall, up against the wall. A Babylon, they wanna see a man a fall. Up against the wall, up against the wall. But Babylon don't know they make me masses stand tall.
The word nightmare is derived from the Old English mare, a mythological demon or goblin who torments others with frightening dreams.
So, I want to go back to this lucid dreaming. You have taught yourself how to lucid dream.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
So, there's loads and loads of different ways that you can teach yourself to lucid dream. I decided to use the method that has the most scientific backing. So, some researchers basically tested every method that they could think of against each other to see which one was most successful. And the one that was most successful was a combination of two methods. One, wake back to bed, which is exactly what it sounds like. You go to bed, you wake up, you go back to bed. So you set your alarm for about 4 or 5 hours after you've been to sleep, get yourself up, stay up for about an hour, and then go back to sleep. And the reason for that is because you're interrupting your dream state with a wake state, so you're kind of forcing them to integrate.
Right, yes.
So when you go back into sleep, you're going from waking consciousness straight into dream consciousness, REM sleep usually, which is a really fertile ground for lucid dreaming just on its own. And then as well as that, you do the second method, which is called the mnemonic induction of lucid dreams, or MILD. And that's basically practicing going into a lucid dream as you fall asleep. So you call up a dream that you've had recently and you imagine yourself going lucid and you repeatedly imagine that. And as you fall into sleep, you're kind of almost like tricking your brain into going into a lucid dream by practicing it with your waking consciousness. And the first time I tried that, I went straight into a lucid dream. And I think that was the first time I'd ever had one. That was 3 or 4 years ago. And because I managed to do that, since then I've had lucid dreams spontaneously. They just happen sometimes now. And also, if I set the intention before bed, sometimes I can give myself a lucid dream just by.
And how much control do you actually have? Like, can you think, like, I want to dream, I want to act, like, people talk about acting out fantasies, or some people talk about, like, you know, putting yourself in a situation so that you can see what it's like, or.
Yeah, it really depends. It varies. So sometimes you know that it's a dream, but you have absolutely no control at all. I've definitely had lots of dreams like that. So one that I had last year, I was a participant in a lucid dream experiment, and they asked me to go into a lucid dream and then explore an alien world. And I managed to do it. I went lucid the first night that I tried, and I was walking around my dream looking for a spaceship, and I found one, and I got in the spaceship and I zoomed off into an alien planet. But then when I got to the planet, I didn't have a warm welcome. The aliens didn't want me there. They were really hostile to
Can
me.
Can you remember what they looked like?
Yeah, they were like almost a bit like orangutans, but as if they were aliens. So they had like the stereotypical three long fingers of aliens. Ooh. And kind of alien orangutans. And they didn't like me, and they were chasing me around. And I spent the whole dream running away from them, even though I was lucid. I knew I was dreaming. And I got so frustrated that I ended up waking myself up out of the dream. Because I was like, I know I'm dreaming.
Can you just do that? You can just choose to wake up?
Not always. I could in that dream. It's not always that simple. But I'd been in the dream for probably an hour or so by that point, just running away from them. And I was tired.
I think I find it's harder to actually stay asleep if I haven't. So I've had lucid dreams before, and staying asleep is difficult.
That's
because
common,
I feel like I become aware that I am dreaming, and then kind of slowly, actually kind of on top of whatever's happening in the dream, become aware of my body lying in the bed. And
it's like an out-of-body experience.
So there are kind of like some techniques to like try and keep yourself in the dream. Mm-hmm. And the one I found worked best is rubbing your hands together. So in the dream, you rub your hands together really vigorously, and that it's almost like your mind is getting tricked into receiving the stimulus from the dream rather than from the bed, and then it can kind of pull you back into the dream. You can be there a bit longer.
Wow.
But then it's always temporary. I always kind of fall out of it into waking.
And I remember you telling me that you and your brother used to try this quite a lot, and he had like a special way of telling if he was in a dream or not.
Yeah, so my brother, we tried to get into this dreaming, and for a long time he wrote the number 5 on the back of his hand in permanent marker. And so the idea is that he it's always there. It's kind of like a tattoo, right? You see it all the time. And the idea is that then this kind of permeates into your dream. But while you're dreaming, sometimes words or symbols or numbers can be like slightly different or unreadable. You know, people have a sensation in a dream where they look at a page, they know what it says, but they can't actually see any of the letters. And so he would always look at the back of his hand, and if the 5 was backwards or upside down, or he couldn't actually see the shape of it, then he knew he was in a dream, and this would like trigger himself into starting lucid dreaming. So that was like one thing he used to like initiate it while asleep.
That's one of the methods that I use, actually, not specifically writing it on my hand, but if I'm dreaming and I'm not sure if I'm dreaming or not, I will always look at some writing.
Yeah.
And I'll keep looking at it. And if the writing is unstable and it changes before my eyes, then I know I'm dreaming. And I do the same thing if I'm waking. I'll look at a piece of writing, and if it doesn't change, I know I'm awake. And that's called reality testing.
That's so cool. And so why is it useful to be able to lucid dream? Like, does it provide us with insights?
I think lucid dreaming has incredible possibilities. The thing that people most commonly do in a lucid dream is just have fun. And I think that's meaningful in and of itself, to be able to explore your own virtual reality and
exploring a different kind of consciousness.
Consciousness, having adventures with your own mind. In and of itself, I think that's important and meaningful. But there's lots of other things that people have tried to do in their lucid dreams as well. So you can talk to dream characters that are essentially projections of yourself and sort of come to a better understanding of yourself by talking to different parts of your mind. And you can explore your consciousness. And for people that experience nightmares, you might be able to become lucid in a nightmare and stop it as it's happening.
And sort of face that demon down.
Exactly. Literally talk to your demon and stuff like that.
Have you had any experiences that have been really profound and really stayed with you at all?
In a lucid dream?
Or any dream, actually, but yeah.
Yeah, lots. Probably the most memorable one that I've had was a lucid dream. I was experimenting with the wake back to bed method, and I went into this really long, very deep lucid dream where I went back in time and spoke with my child self. I spoke with the 10-year-old me.
Whoa.
That was really trippy. And the dream was really long, and I spent ages sort of flying around with little me and talking to her about what tribulations she'd face as an adult, and almost felt like I'd opened up a time loop. Kind of when I woke up, it really threw me, and it took me quite a few months to process that dream, and it stayed with me ever since.
And you hadn't intended that, it just happened?
No, so I hadn't. So the lucid part of the dream was that I was aware of what I was doing, but I wasn't really in control. So I was kind of just flying around in my dream, and then I found myself in my child bedroom, and I was there. I was like, whoa, okay. I could consciously choose to interact with her, but I didn't choose that she was there, if that makes
sense.
Yeah.
Oh my god, amazing. What is song number 4?
So, oops, let me have a quick flip. Song number 4 is from a band that I got into when I was about 18, and we're going back to the 70s now. And the reason that I decided to choose this song is because I saw the lead singer, Damo Suzuki, playing in the Jazz Cafe in London about 2 weeks ago. And it was a really profound experience because he's a hero of mine, a musical hero of mine. And I was really torn over whether or not to go and see him, because I thought, you know, don't meet your heroes, people say. But I never got a chance to meet Bowie, and I never got a chance to meet my other heroes like Captain Beefheart and Ursula Le Guin, you know, these people that I've grown up with, and then they're passing away on me before I get a chance to meet them. And there's Damo Suzuki playing in the Jazz Cafe, and I was worried that it would destroy the illusion that I have of him as being this legend musician. But I thought, it's probably worth the risk. So I went along and he was just amazing. He was one of the best gigs I've ever been to. It was as if this is what Can would have ended up like if they'd carried on playing over the years. So I'm going to play a Can song, and it's one of their most beautiful songs, and it's called Deadlock.
News just in. A disco ball is launched into space above New Zealand.
Psychedelic mushrooms reduce authoritarianism and boost nature relatedness.
Kyla's gone, so I'm going to read his headlines. Primates are cloned just like Dolly. Human waste is used to make Marmite-like food for astronauts in space.
Octopus chokes dolphin to death in first ever discovery.
And 3D imaging has a bright new future. Nice range there. I loved your face when I was reading that astronaut headline. I should probably go into it a little bit. It sounds like really cool and really inventive, but also just really gross. So these are scientists at Penn State University, and they are taking down solid and liquid waste, so your poo and your piss, and using microbes to break it down into nutrient parts and via anaerobic digestion. And they're then taking these materials and these nutrients and putting them into a microbial reactor to grow another microbe called Methylococcus capsulitis. And this one is, it's already used as an animal feed, and it contains like 50% protein and a third fat. So it's really, it's got a lot of protein and fat in there. It's very nutritious.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah. But because it's just a microbe and it's tiny, it's not really, you can't like bite into it. So yeah, they were like, well, you'd have to eat it a bit like Marmite, and you'd be, it'd just be like a smear of microbial goo. Nice. Josie, tell me about psilocybin.
So the story about psilocybin is coming from the Imperial Research Group that have been doing lots of amazing research with psychedelics. And their latest study was looking to see if they could find a causal link between psychedelics and political views and how connected people feel to nature, because it's obviously it's long been associated, psychedelic use has long been associated with anti-authoritarian countercultures, and also
feeling connected to the world and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and also connections with nature, but that was all correlational. So they wanted to do an experimental study. So they had a very small participant pool, only 7 in the treatment group and 7 control subjects, but they had really interesting results. So the participants that received the dose of psilocybin ended up espousing more anti-authoritarian views both immediately afterwards and then a year follow-up, whereas the
So it stays with you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
yeah.
why people say like LSD can be life-changing.
It's life-changing. Yeah, exactly. And this was just one dose. Wow. And the healthy control subjects didn't have any changes like that.
That's so interesting. One of Kyle's stories, primates have been cloned just like Dolly the sheep. So this is really exciting. For the first time, some macaques, that's kind of monkey, have been born that were cloned using the same technique as was used to create Dolly. It's called somatic cellular transfer. Somatic cells are like body cells. So this is where genetic information from an older individual is transplanted into a new cell, reprogramming it and reverting it back to its embryonic state. And then that embryo can successfully grow into a new animal. It's long eluded researchers to do this with primates, but a Chinese team has succeeded, and this could make disease in research into disease in primates much, much easier, because you could have genetically identical specimens and then just like be changing one thing and really see that effect. I don't know. I think it's Brave New World-esque.
Human cloning is the next step.
Octopus. I love octopuses. So seeing Blue Planet 2, I was just like,
They're the most amazing animals ever. Apparently they're like nearly as intelligent as kind of the more conscious animals. Yeah. But they're the closest we can get to aliens because they diverge so far back from our evolutionary tree.
Right. Yeah. So I love this story. It's kind of gruesome, and this isn't because I don't like dolphins. I love dolphins too. But so a dolphin that's called Gilligan tried to eat an octopus, and the octopus was dead. But when octopuses die, their tentacles still have literally a mind of their own. They're almost like a mini brain. And so apparently dolphins can disengage their epiglottis. But
it's like the flap at the back of your throat.
Yeah, the flap at the back of the throat. So that allows them to open it up and eat huge
mouthfuls of fish.
Prey. Yeah, so it tried to eat this ginormous octopus, 4.6-pound octopus. And the octopus's tentacle grabbed onto the dolphin's larynx and literally suffocated it to death, even though the octopus was also dead. So it's this kind of like death battle between the dolphin and the octopus. And I love this story because it's like a final hurrah of the octopus, isn't it? Like the revenge of the octopus. This is what happens. Yeah, if you try
eat me and I will kill you.
Yeah, exactly.
And just a final nod to this disco ball that's been lodged into space. It's called the Humanity Star. It's like bright and shiny and made from carbon fiber and highly reflective panels. And it should circle the Earth every 90 minutes. So the company that launched it, Rocket Lab, saying, oh, my hope is that those looking up will feel connected. But you know, and you know, connected across the globe because everyone can see it. But loads of astronomers are really angry because they're like, this is blocking the night sky. It's graffiti. It's vandalism. It's polluting the last like frontier. So yeah, controversial. Josie, what is your fifth song?
My fifth song. This is a song by Inni Kamosi. I discovered him just a few years ago, even though he's been making music since the 80s. And the song that I'm going to play comes from an album that was released in my birth year, 1984. And literally, I'm just playing this because it's sublimely beautiful. And it's called Wings With Me.
I love the world I see. Do you want a wings with me? Come in. Come.
In the animal kingdom, armadillos and opossums may be the most prolific dreamers. Gosh, I never thought about animals dreaming. That must be a whole other area.
Yeah.
So we've been talking about all these different kinds of dreams, and you've mentioned quite a few, but another aspect of your work is actually looking at what they mean and how they relate to our life, and you call this dream work.
Yeah.
Tell me about that, because like, ever since I was a kid, like, that's the thing that you want to know. Like, do your dreams mean something? Do they always mean something? Are there symbols to decode in them?
So I do dream work as part of my research and just for my own interest as well. Dream work is pretty much any kind of dream exploration or dream appreciation or just engaging with your dreams pretty much in any way. And one of the ways that you can do dream work is trying to see how the dream connects to waking life. And seeing if you can understand your own waking life better by working with your dreams. So that's the sort of research that I've been doing, is I get people to come in with a dream that they've had and I work through it with them. And through doing that, I've found that people come up with real insights sometimes, because often the dreams will be picturing in quite bizarre ways the patterns from their waking life that they're perpetuating, that they don't want to perpetuate anymore. And when they've identified that pattern in the dream, there's this sudden burst of insight of, wow, this is a pattern from my waking life that I really need to address.
Can you give an example?
It's often things like relationship patterns. So like the relationship the person will have in the dream, the relationships their person will have in the dream will be very similar to relationships that they've had with their parents. that they then go on to have with their friends and their work colleagues and their lovers and just everybody in their life. And they suddenly go, wow, this dream relationship is identical to every relationship I've ever had, something like that. And then they're like, oh, okay, I need to stop and they engaging start, yeah. with this sort of person.
Ah, that's so interesting. And so you actually work with lots of people as over this, kind of looking at their patterns and...
Yeah, so far I've only really worked with one dream per person. I'd like to do it much more in depth, so repeated weeks of working with the same person, working with lots of different dreams, but it's obviously very labour-intensive kind of research. So I haven't got around to that yet, but hopefully that's something to do in the future.
Amazing. And yeah, if people want to find out more and look into the meaning of their dreams more, is there somewhere they can go and get more information, or are there a few questions that you think they should just think about?
There's so many different ways of doing dream work and exploring dreams. I'd say the first thing to do is just start writing them down. Giving them titles can help sometimes, writing down what the themes are, what the dominant emotion in the dreams are, and recording them over a period of time. And then once you've done that for a while, look back on all of them and start to look for themes. Look for patterns.
Yeah. Are you always dreaming about the ocean, or exactly. is the same person always showing up?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And how like much that. Do they? How much are they influenced by real life? Like, because I know when I started teaching and I was really stressed about, like, it was a huge kind of challenge. I started having dreams about that school, the anxiety dreams. But I've never had any other kind of times where I'm like, oh, that's really obviously influenced by my life.
It really varies from dream to dream, because the dreams that we have vary according to the time of night that we have them and the stage of sleep that they come from. So if you have a dream that comes from early in the night from non-REM sleep, that's usually really obviously recognizable from waking life. It's usually representing some kind of concern or worry that's going on for you at the moment. Whereas dreams that come from much later into the night and from REM sleep, they tend to be more bizarre and harder to recognize from waking life. But a lot of those kind of dreams will incorporate little elements from waking life, like people that you know or places that you've been, and then
mush them all together.
Yeah. And we call that hyper-associativity. And that's possibly one of the mechanisms that underlies things like emotion processing and memory consolidation and that kind of thing.
I was going to ask, because for ages people, I don't know if this is still kind of what the field thinks, but that it's when we were putting our short-term memories from the day into long-term memories, that's what dream was.
That's definitely what's happening in non-REM sleep. Like sleep science has shown that fairly unequivocally, that we're transferring memories from our hippocampus into the neocortex during non-REM sleep. It's a lot more complex in REM sleep, and it's less understood what REM sleep is for, because it's much messier, and it seems to be more about reprocessing, getting gist information, coming up with insights, thinking creatively, thinking in really hyper-associative ways, that's much less about just solidifying the memories and much more about transforming them.
Wow. Josie, I wish I had a whole nother hour. Like, it's been so fascinating talking to you, and
thank
everything
you
say just brings more questions. But unfortunately, we are coming to the end of our show. We just have time to reveal the answer to our brain teaser for anyone who wasn't listening at the beginning. If a psychologist studies the mind, the science of the mind, and a biologist studies the science of living things, what do you call someone who studies the science of dreaming? I've had a few guesses, but nobody's got it right yet. Josie, can you reveal us the answer, please? Also, I don't know how to pronounce it, so you definitely have to say it.
It's an onirologist, from the Greek word oniris, which means dream.
Onirologist. And on that note, what is your final song?
So I wanted my final song to be related to dreams, and I wanted it to be a song that was influenced by and inspired by a dream. And there's a few examples of songs like that, like Yesterday by the Beatles apparently come fully formed to Paul McCartney. I didn't want to play that because I don't like that song. So the song that I've chosen was inspired by a dream. And I also wanted to choose something that I could dedicate to my partner, Paul. So this is The Prophet Song by Queen.
Hold on now. find a comfortable place to sit or lie down. Lying down is best if possible. When you have found a spot, take a moment to arrange yourself so that you are comfortable, and then close your eyes. We're about to take a journey into a hypnagogic dream induction. Whatever you might be thinking might be about to happen, let go of that thought. Let go of any expectations you might have and try to just relax into it and enjoy it. Everyone who does this will have a different experience, and no experience is right or wrong. It's simply yours. With your eyes closed, begin to notice your breath. Notice when you breathe in and notice when you breathe out. Start to take some gentle, deep breaths. Breathe slowly in for 4 and slowly out for 4. Breathe in 2, 3, 4. And out, 2, 3, 4. Breathe in, 2, 3, 4. And out, 2, 3, 4. Breathe in, 2, 3, 4. And out, 2, 3, 4. Continue breathing this way for a moment. As you breathe slowly in and out, feel your muscles begin to relax and soften. Let go of any tension that may be in your body. Your limbs are growing heavier. Feel the bed or chair beneath you, the pillow softly holding your head, your back connected to the bed as it holds you up, the connection between the bed and your arms, the bed and your legs. Now we're going to clear our minds of anything that might be bothering us right now and let them go. You don't need to think about those things right now in this space. They can wait. You may have specific worries or slight aches and pains in your body or feelings of anxiety or stress. Bring a worry to the forefront of your awareness. Just one thing for now. Now imagine placing that worry at a far distance away from you, outside of your body, where it can't bother you. When you've done that, bring anything else that's bothering you at the moment into focus. Now imagine putting that too away at a far distance away from you, outside of your body. Keep doing this until everything that is currently bothering you has been put far away from you. I'll give you a minute to do this. With all that cleared away for now, you can be present in this moment. Right now, there's nothing you need to think or worry about. Everything can wait. You are safe, calm, and comfortable. Hear your heart beating. Feel your limbs growing a little heavier. Hold your mind clear. Hear your breathing. Don't drift off into sleep. Stay connected to my voice and to the feeling of the bed supporting you and holding you up. Your body is relaxing deeper and deeper. Now breathe in, 2, 3, 4, and out, 2, 3, 4. Breathe in, 2, 3, 4, and out, 2, 3, 4, and in, 2, 3, 4, and out, 2, 3, 4. Now, think about a positive, pleasant emotion that is relevant for you right now in your life. It could be joy, love, curiosity, gratitude, awe, pride, serenity, hope, or any other pleasant, positive emotion that's relevant to your life right now. Once you have chosen an emotion, allow the feeling of that emotion to be felt in your body. Allow the feeling to course through your body, through your blood and your muscles, in your mind, in your head, in your face, in your neck, your shoulders, down your arms, into your hands and your fingers. Feel it in your back, in your chest, in your belly, your pelvis and your bottom. Feel it in your thighs, knees, calves, feet and toes. Embrace and embody that feeling and let it course through your body. With that emotion engulfing your body and still with your eyes closed, now allow a visual image to appear in your mind's eye. It can be any kind of image, or simply a pattern or shape or colour, whatever appears. Don't force it, don't look for it, just allow it to appear before you. Breathe slowly and softly into the image when it appears and let it take shape on its own. Let it move around and shift as it likes. Let it wander undirected. Let it move and change. What does it look like? What colours can you see? What texture is it? What shape is it? What does it feel like? I'll stop talking for a moment to allow the image to unfurl in front of you. When you're ready, very slowly and in your own time, count backwards from 5. Open your eyes and sit up. With the pen and paper next to you, write down any image, or draw if you prefer, any images that you saw.